Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashodanandana Vraja Janarangana Yamana Tira Vanachari Yamana Tira Vanachari Vihari Nayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Shubhat Paramahansa Parivrajika Acharya Ashtotarashtra Shri Shimare Shri Bhakti Gairanta Swami Pumpar Ki Jai Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nithai Gaura Pramande Hari Samaveta Bhakta Ki Jai Agarishri Shri Shri Guru Gauram Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 16, The Lord's Opulence. Today's three verses, 33 through 35. 33, the word meanings, Vishvavasu, Purvachitti, Gandharva Apsara Asam, among the Gandharvas and Apsaras, Aham, I am, Bhudharanam, of the mountains, Aham, I am, Sthairyam, the steadiness, Gandhamatram, the perception of aroma, Aham, I am, Bhuvaha, of the earth. Vishvavasu Purvachittir, Gandharvapsadasamaham, Buddharanam aham sthairyam Gandhamatram aham bhuva Vishvavasu purvachittir Gandharvapsarasamaham Buddharanamaham sthairyam Gandhamatramaham bhuvam Vishvavasu purvachitta Gandharvapsarasamaham Buddharanamaham sthairyam Gandhamatramaham bhuvam Translation. Among the Gandharvas, I am Vishvavasu, and I am Purvachitti among the heavenly Apsaras. I am the steadiness of mountains and the fragrant aroma of the earth. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 7.9, Lord Krishna says, Punyo Gandha Prithivyam Cha. I am the fragrance of the earth. The original fragrance of the earth is very pleasing and represents Lord Krishna. Although unpleasant aromas may be artificially produced, they do not represent the Lord. Apamrasascha paramaste tishtanam vibhavasu prabhasu yendutaranam shabdoham nabasapara. I am the sweet taste of water, and among brilliant things, I am the sun. I am the effulgence of the sun, moon, and stars, and I am the transcendental sound that vibrates in the sky. And finally, verse 35. Brahmanyanam baliraham viranam ahamarjunaham Bhutanam sthitir utpattir aham vaikrati sankrama. Among those dedicated to Brahminical culture, I am Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana, and I am Arjuna among heroes. Indeed, I am the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of all living entities. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. A little something about these entities that are coming up today. Some living entities, some not living entities. They all represent some particular aspect of Krishna. First, Vishvavasu, Among the Gandharvas, I am Vishvavasu. Of course, the Gandharvas are the heavenly musicians. Whenever there's a party going on, you'll always find the Gandharvas there. The story of King Indra being... Well, when he offended his spiritual master arrived one day, and Indra was having a big party. So the Gandharvas were there at that time. Of course, Indra failed to receive his spiritual master properly, and that caused a lot of problems. So the Gandharvas, they're mentioned often, practically every time when you hear some special thing happens and living entities assemble from all over the universe, the Gandharvas always seem to be there. Vishvavasu is their leader, or one of their leaders. I could only find one place where he was mentioned specifically. In the third canto, Kardama Muni he's been meditating. He's a sage, been meditating for a long time. But he's a Prajapati, so he has to get married and have children. So he wants to have a wife. So Swayambhuva Manu arrives, says, "I have a daughter, Devahuti, who's of marriageable age." And Kardama Muni says, "Oh yes, I heard about her. She was playing ball on the roof of the palace." It's interesting, the girls are always playing ball. You'll find that in the Bhagavatam. So don't look at women playing ball. So she was playing ball on the roof of the palace, and it said, and Kardama Muni said, "I heard that Vishvavasu was flying by in his airplane, and he crashed or something happened just by seeing her." So Kardama Muni said, "I know how beautiful she is. Her reputation precedes her. She's so beautiful, she knocks Gandharvas out of the sky with her beauty." So he said, "Sure, I'll marry her." No problem. So that was Vishvavasu. He was, of course, we know they're all beautiful themselves. Who was it? Just another beautiful Gandharva. I forget which one it was. Chitrangada, maybe. What was her name? Renuka, the wife of... What's Parasuram's father's name? Jamadagni. Yes. She went to get water one day, and she saw this Gandharva, and she had some lusty desires. And then her husband, he just by looking at her, he could tell that what she had done. She had these adulterous thoughts. So she told her sons, kill her. And they wouldn't do it. So then he asked Parashuram, said, "Kill her and all your brothers." So he did it immediately. And then his father said, "Oh, you're such a faithful son, so what? I'll fulfill any desire you want. What do you want?" He said, "Bring my mother and my brothers back to life and let them not know that anything happened." And they woke up and they just thought they took a nap, and then they were feeling all refreshed. And the idea there is that Parashuram knew how powerful his father was, so he didn't have any problem killing them because he knew all he had to do was ask his father to bring him back to life, and he could just bring him back to life. So anyway, that was another episode having to do with the Gandharva. Now, Purva Chitti, I'm not going to talk so much about her, but I'm going to talk about where she fits in the Bhagavatam. I always like to try to figure out the Bhagavatam, the lay of the land, how it all fits together. It's hard to remember it, but let me give it a try. The story actually goes way back. At the end of the second canto, Shaunaka Rishi, well, Shukadeva Goswami, we know we have multiple narrators. So Shukadeva Goswami, after talking about some technical things having to do with this material world, so he says, "Now I'm going to talk about the Padma Kalpa." So when Shaunaka Rishi, who of course is hearing this from Suta Goswami, hears this, he says, "Can we hear about Vidura?" Kind of like, instead, we've been hearing all this technical stuff. "Can we hear about Vidura? Because you mentioned earlier," this was actually back in the first canto, chapter 13, how Dhritarashtra quits home. We heard about how Vidura came home from pilgrimage, and he preached to Dhritarashtra, And he told him, you know, get out of here, and you're in Maya living here like a dog in the house of Yudhisthira and so on. So he left home. So Shaunaka Rishi wanted to hear more about that. So the third canto, we hear this about how Vidura was traveling, and first he met Uddhava, and he learned about the destruction of the Yadu dynasty and Krishna's disappearance. And Uddhava sent him to Maitreya, so he started hearing from Maitreya. Actually, he wanted to hear what Krishna taught to Uddhava as Krishna was leaving just before he left this world, as Maitreya was also there. So Uddhava said, well, Maitreya heard everything Krishna had to say too, so you can hear from him. So when Maitreya begins speaking, as is often done, he starts talking about the creation. And in talking about the creation, one thing we see sometimes if you know, we do verse by verse, and sometimes we may get lost, we don't really understand what the story is, how things are unfolding here. So a lot of it has to do with, there's a chronology going on often. So part of the chronology that goes on is the creation, how the creation unfolds. And then we start hearing about people and kings and their descendants and so on. So that thread runs through the whole Bhagavatam practically. So Maitreya starts talking about the creation, and as part of the first the material elements and so on, and then he talks about the creation of Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Shatarupa. Now they're supposed to be Prajapatis because Brahma's business in the beginning is to populate the universe. He's been given that service by Krishna. I've created this material world that needs to have people in it so they can try to fulfill their desires and go back to Godhead. So he creates Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, and he tells them to create population. And they say, Manu says, well, there's a problem. There's no earth to put them on because the earth is at the bottom of the Garbhodaka ocean. So maybe you can do something about this. You know, the whole story, Brahma was thinking, well, what do I do about this? And this little tiny boar came out of his nose, and then we have, that's the context of the pastime of Lord Varaha, which takes a few chapters in the third canto. So after that's done, we start hearing about the children of Manu. Manu had three daughters and two sons. The two sons were Uttanapad, the father of Dhruva Maharaj, and Priyavrata, and the three daughters were Akuti, Prasuti, and Devahuti. So first we hear about Devahuti. So that's why we're hearing about in the third canto, we're hearing about Kapiladeva, the teachings of Lord Kapiladeva. Begins in chapter 25 and goes to the end of the chapter, chapter 33, I think it is. So that's all the teachings of Lord Kapiladeva. So that's in the context of hearing about the children of Devahuti. And we also hear about, of course, Devahuti, she had nine daughters and one son, Lord Kapiladeva. So then we start hearing about, let me see here. Oh yeah, the beginning of the fourth canto, first chapter is called the genealogical table of the daughters of Manu. So we start hearing about the daughters of these Akuti, Prasuti, and Devahuti. So Akuti was married to Ruchi, and they had their son is the famous Yajna, the incarnation of the Lord Yajna. And then we hear about Prasuti and Daksha. Now, in the context of Prasuti, hearing about Daksha. Wait a minute, let me just go on here. Devahuti and Kardama Muni, we also hear about them. So we hear about Devahuti and Kardama Muni and their nine daughters. Prasuti and Daksha, now they had 16 daughters. So Maitreya is speaking here. He's talking about their 16 daughters. So you hear a lot about she married him and so on, and that their son was, and so on. And you hear a lot of this kind of thing. But when he gets to the 16th daughter of Daksha, then he says her name was Sati, and she didn't have any children. So then Vidura says, well, why not? All the other ones had children. Why didn't she have children? So that's why we hear the story of the Daksha Yajna. We hear the whole the story of Sati, why she ultimately, of course, because of the problems that were going on between Daksha and Lord Shiva, Sati ultimately committed suicide by burning herself up. So then Manu, after talking about, after that story, he goes back to talking about the sons of Manu. Do we see it? It's all this connection to Manu. He's still talking about the generations coming from Manu. So now he's talking about the son, so he talks about the elder son, who was Uttanapad. So in talking about Uttanapad, he happens to mention, well, he had this son, Dhruva, and Dhruva was upset that he couldn't sit on his mother's lap, and so on. So that's how the story of Dhruva Maharaj comes in, which covers quite a few chapters. And when that's done, then we start hearing some more genealogy, and it goes down this generation, you know, his son was his son and his son, and his son was Vena. So who was Vena, of course? His son was Unga, not Vena. His son was Unga, and the son of Unga, of course, was Vena, and we know what happened to him. He got killed by the Brahmanas, by high-sounding words, because he was such a demon. Which is such an interesting story. The story of Prithu Maharaj covers 10 chapters in the Bhagavatam. Quite a long story. Of course, Vena, you always wonder, why did they make him the king? They knew what he was like. That's always a hard one to understand. He killed his playmates. I mean, what kind of... I don't like this kid, so I'll just throw him in the river. So, anyway, somehow they needed a leader, so they made him a leader. Of course, ultimately he was killed. Then they churned his legs, and then we got Prithu Maharaj. So we get the whole story of Prithu Maharaj. And later in that chapter, towards the end of the fourth canto, we hear about the prayers by Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva met the Prachetas. The Prachetas are the sons of Prachin and Bardhishat. And we hear about Lord Shiva meeting with the Prachetas, then we hear that while this was going on, Narada Muni was preaching to King Prachin and Bardhishat. And what was he preaching to him? Well, the story of Puranjan. That's the end of the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's about Uttanapada and some of his descendants. So in the beginning of the fifth canto, then we hear about Priyavrata. And what we hear about Priyavrata, actually it's mentioned at the end of the, I think it's at the end of the fourth canto. It's said there that he was a disciple of Narada Muni, and Narada Muni taught him about the absolute truth. So, who's asking? I always sometimes forget who the narrator and inquirer are. I think it was Prakshit Maharaj. He asks, well, if he was a disciple of Narada Muni and a very advanced devotee, why did he get married? That's his question. It's like implying that only people in Maya get married. He wasn't married. He was in Maya. He was an advanced soul. So why did he get married? So we hear the story of Priyavrata Maharaj. Now, what did Priyavrata Maharaj do? Of course, he did many things. He was so powerful. Now, this is way back in the early days of the creation. So one thing he did was he didn't like that the sunset was dark sometimes. So he created another sun, basically. And when the sun was on one side of Mount Meru, we had his chariot on the other side to light up. So there was light all the time. And with his chariot, he carved seven dvipas. The seven islands. So these islands are, I didn't write them down here, but one of those seven islands is called Jambudweep. In the fifth canto, we have the prayers by the residents of Jambudweep, and we hear about the different varshas. So in this varsha, in Kimpurusha varsha, Hanuman worships Lord Ram, and this is the prayers that they recite, and so on. It's not very wonderful chapter. Actually, it's a few chapters. One thing that's interesting about this is that one chapter is called Prayers by the Residents of Jambudweep, and it begins in the previous chapter, and it ends in the following chapter. And I always wonder, why did they break up the chapters? I'm always curious about how did these chapters get divided up, because sometimes they don't seem like they begin and end exactly where they're supposed to, and this is one example of it. Anyway, so Jambudweep, Priyavrata, one of the islands that he created was Jambudweep. Now his eldest son, after he ruled for some time, because he had to be convinced that you should do this, because he was a disciple. All Narada's disciples tend to be sannyasis, renunciants. He seems to convince everyone to just give up everything. So that was Priyavrata's inclination. So he had to be convinced, no, this is devotional service, if you can do it. But after a while, he came to a point, and it says he was basically completely infatuated by his wife and got into it. He completely got into the Grihastha ashram. But then a point came where he started thinking of renunciation. Thought, oh, this is all Maya. What am I doing? I need to get out of here. So he gave it all up, and he turned over the kingdom to his sons. Each one was given one of the islands. So one of the sons was Agnidra. He got Jambudweep. And King Agnidra, of course, he wasn't married at that point, so he needed a wife to rule. He was the king. He needed to have also to be married. So he went to Mount Meru to perform austerity. This is a theme we find often in the Bhagavatam. When the children are given the mission to create more children, they prepare themselves. They prepare their consciousness to have good children and take on the responsibility. So he went to Mount Meru to perform austerities and to get a wife. And so Lord Brahma sent him a suitable wife, Purvachitti. This was all an introduction to Purvachitti. This is how Purvachitti arrived on the scene. She was sent there by Lord Brahma. Now, sometimes Brahma sends to break the vows of sages. Well, Indra tends to do that, actually. But Brahma, he wanted to give someone to help. So he sent Purvachitti to King Agnidra. And there's a whole chapter. I think it's called the Story of King Agnidra. This is one of those chapters where I think, well, how does this fit in? How is this helping me advance in Krishna consciousness? Because the whole chapter is just them flirting. Basically, that's what the chapter is. King Agnidra is flirting with Purvachitti. That's what it's about. And he's really expert at it. It says it at the end, that he was expert at flattering women. You may remember that he starts by saying, he pretends that she's a brahmachari. He said, why are you carrying these baskets or something? So anyway, he's talking in code, and and at the end, she's very attracted to him. Of course, he's very handsome. So she agrees to marry him, and they had 9 sons. And the 9 sons, so Jambudweep also has 9 varshas, or sections. So there are 7 dvipas and 9 varshas, at least in Jambudweep. Jambudweep has 9 varshas. So he had 9 sons, and the varshas are named after them. And one of his sons was named Nabhi, and his island, or Varsha, became known as Ajanava Varsha. But that Ajanava Varsha, after the time of Bharat Maharaj, became known as Bharat Varsha. So Bharat Varsha used to be Ajanava Varsha, which was ruled over by Nabhi, the son of Agnidra and Purvachitti. What's that? Yeah, there's a contradiction in our books, actually. Sometimes it says it was formerly Ilavata Varsha, but it also says another place that it formerly was Ajanava Varsha. And I've seen different lists. There's a list, I was researching this one time, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in a purport that comes from sometimes probably quotes Bhaktisiddhanta's commentaries on Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he gives a list that has 2 or 3 different names in it, different from the one that appears in the Bhagavatam. So, I don't know. I don't really have an explanation for why that is. So, now let's see. So, among the Gandharvas, now one thing is, here we have the Gandharvas and the Apsaras. So, they're often together. They're like the singers and the dancers when you have entertainment. So, the singers are the Gandharvas and the Apsaras are the dancing girls. That's what's happening in the party in the heavenly planets. There's a lot of that going on there. Let's see, among mountains, I'm the steadiness of mountains. I'm the fragrant aroma of the earth. Now, what I find interesting here, in some of these verses, you can kind of read them in 2 different ways, and we see that in the word-for-word and in the translation. Because in the word-for-word, it says, the perception of aroma. So in other words, that power to perceive aroma, or that act of perceiving aroma, it says here, that I am of the earth. I am that. I am that perception of aroma, Krishna says. Yes, Krishna says here. But then it's translated that just says, I am that fragrance itself. So you can see how there are 2 kind of categories of ideas that are going on simultaneously. We'll see this coming up too in another one. It says, I am the sweet taste of water. So we know this from Bhagavad Gita. It's one we often quote, and because we can't remember the whole list, this is one everybody remembers. I am the taste of water. Apam rasaha. Parama. Parama. And so, of course, parama means the excellent taste of water. It's translated in a translation. It says the sweet taste of water. Among brilliant things, I am the sun, which is interesting. It's the same word. It's Vishvavasu. This is Vibhavasu. The sun is Vibhavasu. Now, this last one here, Shabdoham Nabhasa Para. So I am the, how's it translated? I am the transcendental sound that vibrates in the sky. So when I first read this, I thought, well, is all the sound transcendental? But I don't think that's the point. I think the point is, para, the word para means transcendental. So among the sounds that are vibrating in the sky, I'm the transcendental sound, not the mundane, not the prajalpa. That's not me. Transcendental vibrations, that's me. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives another perspective on this. And he says that this para, I think he gives it a long A at the end, which it doesn't have here. But, where is this? Oh, here it is. So sound, you may have heard this before, there's actually four levels of sound. So he says that this is one of those four levels. I'll just read this from a purport in the 11th canto, chapter 21. It says, according to Vedic knowledge, the Vedic sound is divided, Vedic sound, apparently not any sound, the Vedic sound is divided into four phases, which can be understood only by the most intelligent brahmanas. This is because three of the divisions are internally situated within living entity, and only the fourth division is externally manifested as speech. Even this fourth phase of Vedic sound, called Vaikari, is very difficult to understand for ordinary human beings. In other words, even the balanced sound that we can hear with our ears, Vedic sound is hard to understand, what to speak of the internal sounds. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains these divisions as follows. The prana phase of Vedic sound, known as para, so this is what Vishwanath says this is referring to, or can refer to this verse, I am the sound. So para, aham, nabha, nabhasa, para, transcendental. So he says it may refer to this. The prana phase of Vedic sound, known as para, is situated in the adhara chakra. So I looked this up, adhara, and I couldn't find, but I found mula adhara, which I think is the same thing. Because mula just means the root, and the adhara chakra is at the base of the spine, or in the pelvic area, sometimes it's described. So it's the lowest, it's the foundational chakra, you might say. So that's why it's called mula adhara, because mula means the root. So here it's called the adhara chakra. The prana phase of Vedic sound, known as para, is situated in the adhara chakra. The mental phase, known as pasyanti, is situated in the area of the navel. It's mental sound, but it's in your navel. Maybe our minds are always on our stomachs. Let's see. Pasyanti, on the navel, on the manipuraka chakra. That's where the manipuraka chakra is. The intellectual phase, so now intellectual phase of sound, known as Madhyama, is situated in the heart area in the Anahata Chakra. Finally, the manifest sensory phase of Vedic sound is called Vaikari. So that's one take on this. I'm the sound that vibrates in the sky. So finally, among those dedicated to Brahminical culture, I'm Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana. Arjuna among the heroes, creation, maintenance, annihilation of living entities. So Bali Maharaj, of course, there's so much to say about Bali Maharaj. I don't have time to say his story. Everyone knows the basic story of Vamanadev. But I just want to read one thing you might not have. Now, you know at the end of the story of Vamanadev, it's supposed to be a punishment that he's sent to the lower regions because, as the verse says there, that he was cursed by Shukracharya. To go to hell. Sometimes it's called hell, but actually there's subterranean heavenly planets. They're also called hell. So he went to Sutala. He was Sutala Loka. But Lord Vamanadeva became his gatekeeper there, which was pretty nice. And this is from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, If I remember correctly, the context of this is that Narada Muni is glorifying Prahlad Maharaj. And he's glorifying, in glorifying Prahlad Maharaj, the story of Bali Maharaj comes up. Maybe I don't have this straight, but this is a basic idea. The story of Bali Maharaj comes up, and whoever is speaking says, actually, Bali Maharaj, the only reason he got the blessings of Vamanadeva was because of Prahlad Maharaj. Because Prahlad Maharaj was his grandfather, and he was such a great devotee that Lord Vamanadeva blessed Bali Maharaj by becoming his gatekeeper. So this is from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita 1.4.14 in the purport. The Prahlad Samhita of the Skanda Purana in the chapters describing the glories of Dwaraka Dham relates the following history. When Dwaraka city was once attacked by 10 powerful daityas, a committee of residents headed by Durvasa Rishi went in great distress to the abode of Bali Daityaraj, so Sutala Loka. They traveled from Dwaraka to Sutala. There the sage Durvasa beseeched Lord Vamanadeva to come to Dwaraka to defend them. But the Lord replied, O best of the Brahmanas, I am not independent. Because I am purchased by pure devotion and by that alone, I am now the order carrier of Bali. I am completely controlled by that king of the Daityas. That's also an interesting thing. You would think that after Prahlad, they'd all be devotees, but apparently not. Prahlad's son was Virochana, and Bali Maharaj was still an Asura. Still have this Asura Sampradaya going on here. So he's the king of the Daityas. So, my dear excellent Brahmana, please go ask the demon Bali, son of Virochana, and if he orders, I shall at once do whatever you want. That's from the Skanda Purana. But when Durvasa submitted his request to Bali Maharaj, Bali refused to give his permission for Lord Vamanadeva to leave Sutala Loka. Even after Durvasa expressed the intention to fast until death, Bali told him, let whatever you intend come about. Whatever you have in mind, please do that. I guess the Asura qualities are coming out a little bit there. Now you want to kill yourself? Go ahead. But I shall never give up. Of course, this is really what he's thinking. But I shall never give up the 2 feet at which Brahma, Rudra, and all other demigods bow down. So now I get Vamanadeva. I'm not letting him go. So that's from the Skanda Purana. And just one other thing related to this. This is also from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. While invading the region of Patala, Ravana came to the... This is about Ravana, because Ravana is going all over the place. He's so powerful. So he went to the region of... Sometimes all the seven are called Patala, even though the very bottom one is Patala Loka. Sometimes it just as a group, they're also called Patala. While invading the region of Patala, Ravana came to the entrance of Bali Maharaj's capital. But Lord Vamanadeva, standing at the gate with club in hand, refused to let Ravana enter and neglectfully kicked him far away. This is mentioned in one of our purports, actually one of Prabhupada's purports. Just this last part, that one time Vamana kicked Ravana away. And one interesting thing about Bali Maharaj, of course he was Indra for a time, he took Indra's position, then Indra won it back with the help of Vamanadeva, of course that's what that's all about. But in the next Manvantara, Bali will be Indra. Because the Indras change with every Manvantara, every rule of the Manus. So in the next Manvantara, Bali Maharaj will have that post of Indra. All right, I'll stop here. Anybody have anything to say? And I have a few notes here too. No? So we'll stop. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.